Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Homes.com knows that when it comes to home shopping, it's never just about the house or condo. It's about the home. And what makes a home is more than just the house or property. It's the location and neighborhood. If you have kids, it's also schools, nearby parks, and transportation options. That's why Homes.com goes above and beyond to bring home shoppers the in-depth information they need to find the right home. And when I say in-depth, I'm talking deep. Each listing features comprehensive information about the neighborhood, complete with a video guide. They also have details about local schools with test scores, state rankings, and student-to-teacher ratio. They even have an agent directory with the sales history of each agent. So when it comes to finding a home, not just a house, this is everything you need to know, all in one place. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Kramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Kramer. I'm going to make friends. I'm just trying to make you a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to explain. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC. Tweet me Jim Cramer. Darn those stupid facts. They just won't play the game. Today we heard so many narratives to so many companies, and I found myself thinking that all is not well in corporate America, which is why the averages stumbled in the morning, ultimately closing down 96 points. S&P advanced 0.29%, while the Nasdaq, not burdened by the slings and arrows of a sluggish economy, gained 0.43%. Yet today's reminder that companies still have plenty of problems, especially the bigger companies, in many cases because of inflation. Some of those that raised prices are now seeing shrinking sales, and that means it's time to roll back their product pricing and, sadly, their stock prices with it. It's disturbing, but it's also par for the course at this point in the business cycle. You need a stock like a Netflix, which reported a beautiful set of numbers this evening and isn't hamstrung by anything other than its own creativity, ingenuity, and anti-password sharing abilities to make its own numbers. See, right about now, when the Fed's raised interest rates so aggressively that it had to declare a pause, we're finding out the reasons for that pause, why it's needed. But we're also hearing why the Fed might not be done tightening, or at least be reluctant to cut in the spring, because inflation is as sticky as a cinnamon. Now, before I get too granular, let me point out the backdrop this earnings season. When the Fed was tightening like crazy, we punished stocks indiscriminately. Then when the Fed pivoted and acted like they were done raising rates in the fall, everything exploded higher. Everything, including stocks that didn't deserve to rally. And now those unjustified gains from the stocks that shouldn't have rallied are being rolled back, and in some cases rolled back aggressively, while others that made their quarters and then some when we thought they wouldn't are exploding higher. How about some examples of both? Now, we know that housing is supposed to be hurt by higher interest rates, but high rates clearly didn't dent the numbers from high-end home builder Toll Brothers and the geniuses at Lennar when they reported last month. But today we got results from D.R. Horton. That's the largest home builder, and people didn't like the numbers at all. Margins, which had been going so well for all the other home builders, didn't go well for Horton. Worse, Horton had to offer incentives, complicated mortgage incentives that amount to giving people breaks to buy their homes. So the stock plunges more than $14, or 9% today. Although keep in mind it had run from $100 in late October, the pivot, to nearly $158 yesterday. People were betting that lower interest rates would save Horton, but they forgot that those rates are headed lower precisely because companies like this one are starting to feel the pain.
The house of pain.
Or how about 3M, where my dad used to work? This storied company saw its stock roar from $85 at the October lows to $108 yesterday. Just a gigantic run. However, today we discovered that some of 3M's core businesses got hurt during this period. Big divisions, home, health, auto declined by low single digits. Stationary office products declined by high single digits. Oh, on top of that, things didn't even improve enough at the end of the quarter for CEO Mike Roman to justify a bullish full-year forecast. Instead, the 2024 guidance was below expectations, so 3M nosedives 11%. 11% is a big move. That's a Dow stock. That really hurt the Dow. I got the sense that without the rate cuts, 3M might have a hard time even making the new forecast. Some companies had super strong earnings to the point where you'd expect their stocks to soar. General Electric just put up some amazing aerospace numbers, and I figured its stock would catch fire, especially because it's about to spin off its renewable energy business, which, by the way, looked pretty good. Yet the stock actually opened down for it. Now, GE's been blessed with its own cycle, the aerospace cycle, which acts independently of the Fed. That said, CEO Larry Culp made it clear that there's still way too much inflation in the system and too many supply chain problems, too. It's a credit to Culp that he was able to translate those orders into revenues and then earnings. But GE is somewhat weaker than I expected. And when I dug down, I realized that supply chain issues and inflation really were the culprits. It's kind of like a COVID-era throwback. I chalked it up to what can you do when your business is that strong? You're going to have some inflation. But if you want to see the flip side of those stories, why don't you check out the stocks of Procter & Gamble and RTX? That's the old Raytheon United Technologies combo. Both of these companies had some real issues going into the quarter. Procter's become a serial disappointer of the consumer products group. This is a company that regularly turns a silk purse into a sow's ear, whatever the heck that means. Procter couldn't tell a positive story about the Cincinnati Bengals if they won the Super Bowl, which they didn't. So Procter's stock has been a total... We didn't get any pivot at all from this one. In fact, the stock coming in today was down from where it was trading at the end of October, when the rest of the market bottomed and then rallied furiously, leaving P&G way behind. But because we were ready for Procter & Gamble to once again throw ice water on the positives, it was shocking when management didn't do that, when it didn't make you feel like an idiot, an asbestos idiot, to use French, for owning the stock. In fact, they said people aren't trading down. They're buying P&G's best-of-breed branded products, which allow their margins to go up. I think the stock would have done nothing if not for the expectations game. But the bar was so low, set by the company, of course, that the stock shot up 4%. Hey, a pleasant surprise for my Chalmers Trust, which owns it and will discuss at tomorrow's Investing Club meeting at noon, which I know you won't join, but I don't care. Actually, you probably will, and I really like it. In the end, when Procter didn't mess up the presentations for once, the stock roared. No doubt aided by short sellers who've been betting once again that management would continue to be their own worst enemy and would crush their own stock with negatives because that's all they seem to know how to do. I told my wife to stop using Tide. I was sick of it. I said, give me some positives. Switch to that Unilever garbage. She stayed with Tide. See, we're wedded like everybody else. RTX may be the real tough one here. The stock rallied hard, up 5.3%. Because the company was able to contain a warranty problem involving its geared turbofan aircraft engine. Going into the quarter, there was talk that the $3 billion reserve RTX had taken for the engine problems back in September wasn't big enough. Lots of shorts were betting that way. Yet now we find out that $3 billion was probably much more than they needed, so the stock ignited. What I found most interesting, though, was how outgoing CEO Greg Hayes explained to me that the Federal Reserve shouldn't even be thinking about cutting interest rates. Talk about a parallel universe of that no one's thinking about, but Greg runs a big company. Take a listen to this. You won't believe it.
The fact is there is still a lot of pressure on inflation. Last year, give you an example, we saw $2.3 billion of cost growth from our supply chain and from our labor base. That's about $800 million more than we expected. So the thought that the battle against inflation is over is, I think, misguided. I think this idea of cutting rates when you have 3.7% unemployment is also misguided. The fact is we need more participation in the workforce, and we need to get wages back to a sustainable level of increase.
Now, I know Jay Powell watches it or DVRs the show every single minute, so he's probably shaking right now after you've seen that. Okay, probably never seen it. But anyway, that was pretty amazing, wasn't it? Makes you feel like the Fed should be tightening, not loosening. And therein really lies the problem. We have so many stocks that rallied because buyers were betting on low inflation, a strong economy, and a series of rate cuts. Do we really want those rate cuts? Sure, if you're a suffering home builder like D.R. Horton, but no way if you're a manufacturer like GE or RTX. They still see way too much inflation in the system, and lower rates will just exacerbate their problems. Holy cow, these were two incredible calls. Which brings us all the way back to the top. Today, we realize why the Fed's doing nothing and should stay doing nothing. Maybe we're finally getting relief in home prices. Maybe we're on the cusp of solving the inflation problems of RTX and GE. Maybe Procter can be innovative enough to fend off lower price competition. Or maybe this economy needs another rate hike to make sure all that happens. Boy, is that ever not on the table, huh? Is that ever a contrary view? Bottom line, when you're on the battlefield, the fog of war is so thick, you don't know if it's time to raise rates or cut them. Could go either way. which is why it's nuts that so many money managers are betting on a premature rate cut in March. They ought to go read the conference calls that I did today. They will learn how wrong they are going to be. I want to take calls right now. I want to go to Elizabeth in Florida. Elizabeth.
Booyah, Mr. Kramer. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you, Elizabeth?
Great. So I'd like to know your thoughts on Nippon Steel Corporation stock ticker NSC having the acquisition with the United States Steel Corporation stock ticker X. And what are your thoughts and if it's a good time to buy?
Well, look, I think they're overpaying. But they have a strong yen and they really want to be in here. I don't want you buying the stock. If you're going to own a steel company, you're going to own the best steel company in the world. And that is Nucor. All right, look, we are in a battle about whether the Fed should cut rates or cut rates really hard. And I learned today that perhaps not cutting rates is the way to go. And the people who think they're about to be cut big are nuts. So many managers are betting that way, though, that I got to start thinking about how wrong they could be. Hey, buddy, tonight, I'm focusing on a major theme that could unfold in 2024. That's the comeback of the PC market and breaking it down for what it means so that you can make some money. Plus, could Logitech bank on the trend of PCs? Hey, you know what? After today's post-earnings drop, I'm going to chat with the company's brand new CEO, find out how it's positioning itself. And an app company in Kazakhstan just had the biggest IPO since Birkenstock. I'll reveal what its debut means for companies hoping to come public. And let me just tell you something. It is downright bullish. So stay with Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
I know I'm alone, but I keep telling you the personal computer business is about to turn. More on that later. But how do we square that call with today's horrific 12% sell-off in Logitech International, which makes all sorts of computer peripherals and gaming accessories? Last night, Logitech reported some strong numbers. 39-cent earnings beat off a $1.14 basis with higher-than-expected sales to boot. Unfortunately, rather than focusing on all that good stuff, Wall Street seized upon a single line from the company's guidance, and I quote, "Looking ahead to fiscal 2025, we do not anticipate an inflection point in the slope of this curve," end quote. In other words, they've had negative sales growth and they don't see that going positive in the 12 months ending in March of next year. We'll delve into that. Good. In response, the stock got crushed. So how worried should we be given the fact that the company also gave us terrific earnings beat? Let's check in with Hanneke Faber. She's the brand new CEO of Logitech International. To get a better read of the situation, Hanneke, welcome to Mad Money.
Thank you so much, Jim. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, thank you. Now, you know, we had I'd say Bracken Darrell may have been on the show more than almost anybody else in the history of Mad Money. So we only have his impressions of the company. Tell us your first impressions of what Logitech is like.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's a great company. And I've been here all of 6 weeks now, but I'm super excited about what I'm seeing. Obviously, the company has a great track record of value creation, but it has so much more fantastic product engineering design capabilities, a really good global brand, a presence in more than 100 markets with really good go-to-market capabilities. And finally, it's a real pioneer in sustainability. So I'm delighted by what I found.
All right. So people should know you worked at Procter, most recently Unilever, where you led their $14 billion nutrition group president. So these are clearly, back into two, came from the consumer packaged goods segment, which I really like because it produces so many well-trained people. But what can you bring from that background to make Logitech get it even higher in this game?
Yeah, no, I think a couple of things. As I said, Logitech is a really good brand. It's good, has wonderful awareness. Is it truly iconic yet? I'm not sure. So that's certainly something we will try and do over the years ahead. The other thing is geography. We are in more than 100 markets. But if you look at the sales per capita by country, or the share of wallet, if you will, there's huge differences. In fact, our best country, we sell about 200 times more than some of the lower countries per capita. So loads of opportunities looking forward at growing that business further. And then, of course, there's innovation, which is the lifeblood of this company. And we've got so many wonderful things in market and in the pipeline. So I'm very optimistic.
Before we get to this, I just want to give you an opportunity to not to take back something, because that's not what the game is about, but try to put in a little more context the idea that one point about how sales may not so-called inflect. Because I think that you were being cautious. I don't think you were looking at the tea leaves and saying, it ain't our year.
I think that's well said. What we wanted to do in our our reporting today is make sure that we're a little cautious, because while there's a lot of stuff that Logitech's got going for it, we do think the recovery to growing top line sales will be gradual. And that's because there's so much happening in the external environment. We see global GDP growth a little uneven at the moment. We see inflation being a little stickier than maybe we would like. And on the corporate side, which is really important for our B2B video conferencing business, we're seeing that corporate IT budgets haven't quite come back. They haven't snapped back to where they used to be. And U.S. office vacancy rates just hit an all-time high at 20%. And an empty office doesn't buy any Logitech stuff. So, there's just a lot of things happening in the market. That's why we're a little cautious. But growth is a matter of when, not if, for Logitech.
Good, because you bought a huge amount of stock back. I mean, if you were really, I think you put your money where your mouth is. And if you're really, really, really concerned, I think you would not have bought a share of Logitech stock for the company.
Absolutely. And we've been buying back a lot. We've been throwing off a lot of cash, really a unique Q3 in terms of cash, over $400 million worth of cash. We now sit on $1.4 billion. We have no debt. So a really pristine balance sheet, which is great. It gives us firepower going forward.
OK, so let's talk about something that I think is very important for the gaming side, which you're legendary in. We've been looking very closely for GTA 6, for Grand Theft Auto 6, and you have to have the latest and greatest in order to be able to do this stuff. And my friends who are gamers don't want to be in third-tier hardware. They want Logitech. Can GTA spell kind of like almost like a PC refresh cycle for you? Can it be that important?
Of course, we love gaming. It's a big part of our business. And longer term, again, those macros in gaming are really strong. Used to be a pretty narrow audience gaming, younger men.
Right.
It is now men and women. It is older people and younger people. It's not just shooting games. It's really a way to socially connect. So gaming is a good neighborhood to be in. A single game is not going to change our business. What changes our business is some of the great innovation that we're putting out there. So if I look back to Q3, a couple of the things that we're excited about is our simulation business. So that actually is wheels and driving. We're gaining share there. Those are some really great products, our wheels. Also, the really premium end, our ProLite mouse is the gaming mouse every great gamer wants. And that premium side of the business is also doing really well. We're proud of what's happening in gaming. And again, the future there is bright.
Now, I've read a lot of companies that are having trouble in China. I did not know how you were viewed as the super premium category in China, which apparently is holding up extremely well.
Yeah, China is really important to us. And again, as you say, especially that premium in China is very important to us. It's doing well. We had a good quarter there. Yeah, we like China.
Well, look, I just think that you kind of got a reset in the stock price, probably undeserved it to some degree, but it sounds like things are going very, very well. We are thrilled to have you in your first interview. And Hanneke, we're looking forward to having you on many times on Mad Money. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Hanneke Faber, the new CEO of Logitech, L-O-G-I. Stocks down on what I regard as just being a moment of caution. You just heard what she had to say. She was not pronouncing the end of any sort of cycle, just being, I think, what you have to do, conservative, if you're going to start and have a good run of things. Mad Money is back after the break.
Coming up, Cramer is bullish on the PC market. Why hardware and why now? Explained next.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I keep telling you that 2024 is the year where the personal computer makes a comeback. I think there's a huge PC refresh cycle coming in tonight. I'm going to explain why, and we're going to make a lot of money from it. This industry's had a weird trajectory for the past 4 years. There was this explosion of PC sales in 2020 and 2021, totally unnatural, as people bought new computers so they could work from home. Then we got over the pandemic, and the whole industry ended up with way too much inventory. They had built thinking it would last, this crazy demand would last forever. They ramped up production, assuming high levels of demand would never stop. But in reality, you just don't need a new computer every year, do you? So 2022 and 2023 were truly ugly years for the PC business and everything that went in them. In the middle of last year, though, we started hearing optimism about a bottom in PC sales. Now, some of that's simply timing. If you bought a new computer in the spring of 2020, it's almost 4 years old, which means for many, it's time for replacement. At the same time, the artificial intelligence revolution has made upgrading your computer more essential because you need new hardware to run anything AI related. When you drill down to the quarterly PC sales stats from Gartner, it's clear that turn has already arrived. After being down 9% in the third quarter, PC sales were up 0.3% in the fourth quarter. Okay, not a fantastic number, but it represents a huge shift in the overall trajectory. And on Wall Street, we always call it this kind of thing, inflection point. Yet the global PC market finally had positive year-over-year shipments growth after 8 consecutive quarters of declines. Never been like that before either. And the U.S. numbers were even better than the global ones. So how do we play it? How do we make money from this? I want to make money from it. How about you? All right, look, I can give you any number of answers here. There's a legion of semiconductor companies that will make more money as PCs start growing again. Everything from memory chip makers like Micron and Western Digital, where some were some of the parts much more than it is, ultra-high-tech graphics cards makers like NVIDIA, AMD's a huge PC play. In fact, the theme may be even so strong that I'm going to throw in Intel, even though it's been losing market share to AMD for years. Now, some other large tech companies will get a boost for the PC refresh cycle. Apple seemed weaker at Mac sales of late. That could change. Not that important to the actual stock price. Hey, similarly, you better believe that Microsoft's core business will do better in this environment, and that is important to the stock price. But you know what? Let's not complicate. Let's not overthink. All right, this is really what bad investors do. They come up with a preposterous thesis and hope that everyone comes up with it. You want to bet on a rebound in PCs? Why not just buy the PC makers like Dell and HP Inc., which collectively account for roughly half of U.S. PC sales? HP and Dell actually have very different value propositions. Right now, Dell's stock has been absolutely en fuego, climbing steadily higher since the market-wide bottom October 2022, especially over the past 10 months or so. You know, this stock's up to 150% in the past 15 months, making a new all-time high just last Friday. Meanwhile, HP Inc. has been meandering sideways. The stock was working its way higher for much of last year, then pulled back hard during the late summer sell-off. HP's rebounded over the past few months, but it's still down substantially from its highs last summer. I smell opportunity. Why such disparate performances? This is a little simplistic, but you should think of both Dell and HP as companies that make PCs, but they also do something else. For Dell, the something else is servers and storage infrastructure. That's critical for data centers, large enterprises. For HP, the something else is printers, which are, I'm sorry to say, slowly fading to obsolescence. See, and that's what's keeping HP heat down. That's why it doesn't rally like it should. Now, both of these companies saw mid-teen sales declines in their latest fiscal year, but Dell could point to strong orders and customer interest in its server and infrastructure business. While HP got to tell us, I don't know, that 3D printing will be big someday, even if 2D printing seems like a goner, then that's the main reason why Dell stock has been a much better performer. I don't know. I've spent a huge amount of time trying to figure out how to get out of the HP conundrum here with the printer, and I have not been able to come up with it. But then again, they haven't either. At this point, if you want to think HP is a value proposition, that's fine. It certainly represents value here, with the stock selling for just 8.6 times the midpoint of their full-year earnings forecast. At the same time, HP's paying you to wait. They got a robust 3.7% dividend yield. We spoke to CEO Enrico Lores in November, right after his company reported an inline quarter with a forecast for the next quarter that was widely considered disappointing. But the stock rallied anyway, which told me that the bad news is already baked into HP stock. More importantly, I think Lori's told a great story about HP's outlook for the year ahead, and he's the first one who called my attention to this AI-driven PC upgrade cycle. Thank you, Enrique. If you want a value stock, you got my blessing to pull the trigger right here.
Buy, buy, buy!
HP. How about Dell? All right, after a huge run over the past 15 months, this stock's more expensive than HP, but honestly, not all that much expensive. Incredibly, even after that 150% gain from the bottom in late 2022, Dell trades at only 11.6 times earnings. You know, people keep saying the market's so expensive. You think that's expensive, 11.6? You don't know what you're doing. 11.6 times earnings estimates for the 12 months end next January. Dell also pays a dividend, though its yield is much more modest than HP's. It's 1.8%. Its yield is modest, of course, because the stock shot up. We know that investors don't love to pay up for the hardware companies, but it's not like the stock's going crazy expensive. When you consider that we're at a point where the PC sales growth is inflecting from negative to positive, meaning the turn's happening right now, I think Dell's shares could be blessed with even more multiple expansion. I do hope Mike is watching and can come in, because Michael is a super guy. Easy to make the case, Michael Dell, easy to make this the case that this $82 stock is headed for the triple digits, probably sooner rather than later. Let me give you the bottom line here in a story and a thesis that I'm going to be pushing all of 2024, and by the way, even tomorrow at my 12 o'clock meeting that you're probably not going to go to because you're so busy, you got something else to do. What are you doing, like playing Grand Theft Auto 5 or something? Here's the bottom line. The turn in the PC market is already well underway, thanks to a natural refresh cycle and a newfound AI cycle. That still seems somewhat underappreciated to me. While there are plenty of ways to play it, I don't want you to overthink it. You want PC exposure, you buy HP or Dell. It's just not that complicated. HP is the value option. Dell has better fundamentals and much, much, much more momentum. I want to go to Paul in my home state of New Jersey. Please, Paul.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
What's going on?
Hey, how you doing? Been a long-time fan, but I haven't listened in a while, so I don't know how you still believe in SPACs, but I think I have a good SPAC here. AvPoint, AVPT. They did $260 million revenue last year, and they grow between 15-20% the last 4 or 5 years.
All right, you got to call me skeptical. I mean, I got these rules. They got to be making money if they're a SPAC. I like Vertiv. I like DraftKings. Those are like two SPACs of the 600 that I've looked at. So I'm not going there with the AvPoint. I just can't. I'm afraid of hurting somebody. I want to say I walk around a lot. And I don't want some guy saying, hey, you buried me in that point. So I'm going to take a pass. Let's go to Bill in Massachusetts. Bill.
Booyah, Mr.
Oh,
Kramer.
Man. How you been? All right, big guy. What's shaking?
Hey, I got a few questions for you here, Jim. I know you're familiar with this company. For the last 8 quarters, they've beat their earnings on every for all 8 quarters. I'm very impressed. You talked about this company over the summer, and I picked some up. I'm very happy. It's up $65 a share. It's a digital data cloud company, Adobe.
All right, so I got my daughter for the holidays. I bought her the full suite of Adobe, everything. I mean, the actual, like, subscription. I have to tell you, this company is fabulous, and we all play with it. I mean, it's hers. I gave it to her, but, you know, you're right. I mean, Adobe is incredible, and you can be so creative. People who have a creative bent, please try to get at least one part of the suite. I did buy the expensive one, and you'll know why this stock is up 15% in the last 6 months. It's such a great performer. And that's because Shantanu Narayen has invented, his team has put out a product that is just makes you be creative even if you're not. All right, the turn of the PC market is well underway. And if you want some names to play, don't overthink it. Just think HP Inc. for value or Dell for a little bit better growth. Now, there's much more Mad Money in it, including a Kazakhstan. You know, some people call it Kazakhstan. Those people are wrong. A Kazakhstan-based app company coming public, and it signals to me that the gates are open for the IPO market in 2024. I'm going to give you my take. Plus, China is cracking down on abnormal trading, and I say, give me a break, and I'll explain why. And no one will like what I have to say, but you know what? I don't care. And all your calls rapid fire tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So, stay with Kramer. What if I told you that a Kazakhstani super app just came public in U.S. markets? And a $1 billion IPO that valued the company at over $17 billion. Sounds like something that might have happened in 2021, but it was only a few days ago. Last Friday, a company called CaspiKZ, that's Caspi.kz, which owns the number one super app in Kazakhstan, started trading on the NASDAQ. Apparently, investor demand for this deal was so strong they had to upsize it. Originally, they were going to offer 9 million American depositors shares, but they ended up offering 11.3 million. That's incredible. And the stock actually did fine right out of the gate, rallying 4% on Friday. They gave back some of those gains yesterday. Not incredible. Oh, but we've seen far more hype debuts. So is Caspi.kz worth buying here? I'm reflexively skeptical. But how the heck would I know? I don't have a clue about the mobile software business in Kazakhstan, although I do know where it is on the map. I will say that we've seen super apps from faraway markets come public before, and they've been, you know what, real disappointments. The whole concept here is a mobile platform that offers a wide array of digital services, like a Uber, like a DoorDash, Instacart, Venmo, all rolled into one. They're surprisingly popular in emerging markets. I first heard of super apps from a company called C Limited, which is a variety of gaming, e-commerce, digital payments from businesses across Southeast Asia. Boy, it sounded so fabulous. I mean, I was like put together just for us, right? The stock was red hot in the bubble-ish days of 2020 and 2021, rallying more than 800% from the end of 2019 to its peak in late 2021. At its high, C Limited had a market capitalization of over $200 billion. But then the stock just collapsed.
Sell, sell, sell.
Once the Fed started tightening, it never came back. At this point, it's down nearly 90% from its peak. And yet it still has a $23 billion market cap. It's probably too big. After C Limited, it was another one. It's called Grab. Yeah, this was a digital player that was supposed to be the leader in the Southeast Asian super app space. Grab came public in what was ultimately the largest of the hundreds of SPAC deals during the SPAC boom, when they valued the company at eye-watering $40 billion. But the stock fell through the default SPAC starting price of $10 on its first day of trading after the SPAC merger closed in early December of 2021, and it never came back. These days, Grab is valued at less than $12 billion. That, too, may be too high. So forgive me if I'm not eager to get in bed with another super app story, especially one from Kazakhstan. Okay? Yeah, this place is unbelievable, which is just slightly out of my area of expertise. But if you like it, how about this? If you can name the currency of Kazakhstan, you can consider investing in Kaspi.kz. It's the Tangi. Yeah, the Tangi. That's right. And Kazapsky had Kazapkz had an astounding 1.34 trillion Tangi in revenue over the 9-month period ending in September. That's a heck of a lot of Tangis, isn't it? Although it translates into just under $3 billion in U.S. dollars. All right, in fairness, Kaspi.kz is indeed solidly profitable. And Kazakhstan's a, you know, pretty, like, a play, good place to go. It's like a tourist attraction. By my very rough, by my extremely unbelievably rough estimates, this company seems like it could earn close to $9 per share in 2023, which would mean it's selling for roughly 10 times trailing earnings at these levels. Again, though, unless you're very well traveled, it's just too hard to understand a company like this when you're living in America and you don't visit Kazakhstan regularly. So why bother? I'm bringing up the successful Kaspi.kz deal, not because Kazakhstan really is a giant turnaround or I like Borat or any of that stuff, but because the stock's warm welcome on Friday seemed like a clear sign that the IPO market, I like IPAs, they taste like Cheerios. The IPO market's officially open for business. The Kaspi.kz deal wasn't actually really the first listing of the year. That would be Smith Douglas Homes, and that's a small home builder operating in the Southeast, which kicked things off on January 11th. That one's done pretty well. Pricing at $21, popping to $24 on the first day, hanging on at 24 change. Remember, the definition of a good deal in Mad Money terms is one that lets you get stock and goes up, not a lot, but a little. Because the ones that go up really big, you never get stock in anyway. And the ones that are bombs, well, I'm going to call them out. Later this week, we're going to have three more deals, including a fairly large $880 million offering from Bright Spring Health and a couple of decent-sized biotech deals, CG Oncology and Aravent Biopharma. You know what? I say we are off and running. I think it should be an exciting year in the IPO front with potentially huge deals from fintech unicorns like Plaid, Chime, Klarna, consumer-facing brands like up-and-coming athleisure brand Vuori. I know I'm pronouncing it wrong, but I went to one of the stores in Dallas. It was cool as all get out. Kim Kardashian's shapewear, not to mention loungewear and intimates company Skims and other flashy names like the peer-to-peer car rental platform Turo, potentially the sportswear e-commerce giant Fanatics, and not Brioni. I thought I should put one in that I know. The most exciting deal of the year might be a little tricky, though. I'm talking about Shein, not Henry Schein, but Shein. That's the Asian fast fashion company that's likely to become your daughter's favorite e-commerce destination, although I have checked it out, and I was afraid to put my name in because I figured I'd be spammed from all points around the universe. I've long warned you away from Chinese IPOs because on average they tend to perform a lot worse than their American counterparts. But Shein does have a really compelling story, and the company's technically moved from China to Singapore, even as large parts of its operations remain in the People's Republic. Tough call. It might be a situation where if you can get some shares in the actual deal, admittedly highly unlikely, take it and then flip it. Otherwise, take a pass. But let's see how the numbers look when the deal arrives. It's just everybody's buzzing about the deal. I don't like the long, you know, if you order something from Shein, it's got like this kind of amorphous date of when it comes. Whereas like if you order from Amazon, it tells you to sort it at your house before you even press the button. There are also a couple of IPOs that might be instant favorites of the meme stock crowd. These guys and I are such buddies, I can't wait. Last week, we learned that Reddit's looking to come public in March. Reddit's the social media destination where the memesters organize. It's also where a lot of people get their information, which is I find quizzical. Then there's Discord, which started as a way for gamers to communicate. It's now more of a universal chat platform that lets people talk about everything from stocks to top secret documents. Hey, you'd be so often classified stuff gets leaked on these platforms. We sat down with Discord CEO Jason Citron in September and got a kick out of that conversation. But I'll give you a closer look at the fundamentals once it's about to come public. But it's one of those things that if you're older like I am, you don't realize how good it is until you talk to like 100 million people and they tell you. But you know what I'm most excited about in IPO land? Simple. At least for now, I think this might be a market where you can actually make some money on these deals. This isn't like 2020 and 2021, when every IPO seemed to be sizzling, especially the good ones, nor is it 2022, when nearly all IPOs were hated. to the point where the bankers just kind of gave up with the whole process. Hopefully the 2024 IPO market could be a lot like last year's IPO market, except with a lot more deals. In retrospect, 2023 was a good year for IPO investing because each deal was evaluated on its own merits, which created some terrific opportunities if you knew what you were looking for. For example, I told you to wait after a hot start for Kava Group, but then got behind the stock late last year after it cooled off. Since I went positive on November 1st, Kava's climbed nearly 50% from just under $32 to $47 and change. I also told you that I liked ARM Holdings very much when it came public in September, and that stock's now run for the low 50s to 76 and change. And boy, I still like that team. I would still buy the stock. It is totally gettable. Let's hope this investable period continues. Due to the quality of some of these companies that are set to come public in 2024, I don't get you too excited and losing your discipline, especially with Reddit or Discord, which have huge cult followings. But the bottom line, for now, I'm just optimistic on the IPO market, and I can't wait until things really get going. The Kazakhstan deal was the, but that was like, I'm telling you, that was the... I want to really dig into something, some of these upcoming deals. I will get you into the ones that you can actually get into. I'll keep you out of the ones that you're never going to get any stock. So you don't just sit there and say, why did Cramer tell me to buy that stock? I can't get on it. We're not doing any of that game. Comey is not playing that game in 2024. Mad Money is back after the break.
Coming up, pop open those umbrellas and tee up your toughest questions. Cramer takes on all comers in the lightning round. Next.
And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Skinny Daddy? Cover the light round, Cramer. Let's start with Sam in Massachusetts. Sam.
Booyah, Jimmy Chill.
Yo, Chief, what's happening?
Jim, I've been looking at the small cap industrial, and I wanted to get some of your market wisdom on it. What do you think of Fluor Corporation, FLR?
Sad to say, I remember when it was a large cap and the rest of the market was big, too. It's kind of like Gloria Swanson, you know what I mean? Okay, here's the deal. Fluor, they have missed the quarter more times than I think they've made the quarter. We're going to stay away from them, even though we do like the infrastructure theme. We're not going to play it that way. How about we go to Sunil in California? Sunil.
Hello, Jim. Good afternoon. How are you?
I am doing well. How about you, Sunil? What's happening?
I'm doing well. Happy New Year to you.
Same.
I have a question on a company called Illumina, stock symbol ILMN.
Oh, Illumina. Okay, Illumina is a second-rate Danaher, all right? So you can be with the second-rate. No, whatever. Look, I have been with a lot of second-raters in my life, and I think that second-raters have a place, just like mediocrity had a place in the Supreme Court. But we're going to go by Danaher. We're not going to buy Illumina, and we're just going to put the second-raters to the side for the moment. Let's go to Charlie in California. Charlie.
Hey, Jim. Hey, I want to start off by saying thank you, man. Your show inspired me to start investing. I was a little intimidated about the whole stock market thing. I've been watching you for a while, and you inspired me to jump in. So the airlines have been getting my attention with the whole Boeing dip and everything like that. And with American and the rest of them jumping today, is now a time to get into the airlines or wait?
Yeah, look, I think you can make a couple of smackers in Delta, but there's nothing more than that. These are all trades. People should understand airlines are trades. They had a renaissance, to quote my friend Will Frost. That's kind of gone away. Now it's just up and down and up and down. I say stay away. What do you want to use? Like when he says, we hear these nice things. Those would be such good. It's almost like a commercial for like the Investing Club or something. It would be something. I don't know. I'm just kind of talking out loud. Let's go to Michael in Colorado. Michael.
Hey, Jim. Booyah from the Mile High City.
Excellent. What's up?
What do you think about the luxury segment for 2024? More specifically, what do you think about Ferrari, which some analysts put at a fair value of $275? Right now, it's trading about 21% above that.
It's hard. Right now, the premiumization quality of almost everything other than Richemont is not doing well. I'm going to have to say, let's take a pass on Ferrari, and I have like a full time. And that, ladies and gentlemen, good. At the lightning round!
The lightning round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, what does recent news about Jack Ma signal for China stocks? Cramer warns, not much. And explains after the break.
Stop. Stock manipulation is illegal in this country, and you can go to jail for it. But in China, the rules are different. Their stock market's been struggling, and it's become a pretty dangerous place for your capital. The solution? The Chinese government spending 2 trillion yuan, or $278 billion, to get the stock market going in the right direction. Yet they're creating a stabilization fund, and I'm sure the Communist Party will be in there buying the best of the lot.
Buy.
Not just to make it so savers will do better, but to lure in foreign investors like you who left the building in response to the Chinese market's poor performance. I can see many people in this country arguing that this stock manipulation is a good thing. So it's once again time to buy Alibaba and Baidu and JD.com and NIO, the car company. I'm sure they'll go up a little bit. The Chinese manipulation could cause people to get back into the Chinese market in a big way, though. Because if you can buy Chinese stocks with a floor, I'm sure a lot of people think, why not go for it? Hey, maybe you can get some shares in the red-hot Shein company, which the government will take care of. And you can make some quick money, provided you buy some of the Chinese dogs, the detritus that crushed American investors. Yep, that's manipulation of a different color. That's honest manipulation. To which I say, are you kidding me? This news confirmed to me that the Chinese government is absolutely clueless as usual. They're not trying to make business better, perhaps by crunching the debt of the vacant apartment buildings. That would work. We did that during the savings and loan crisis 30-odd years ago. It was great. They're not lending companies more money so they can hire people and grow. They're not even sending checks in mail to individuals like we did during the pandemic. In fact, they're not doing anything that even the most unsophisticated capitalist countries do to combat a slowdown. Instead, they're just dumping a bunch of cash into the stock market. Shameful and cynical, just like their government. Sarah Eisen asked me today what was the difference between the Fed buying bonds and the Chinese government buying bonds. Fair point, but the Fed buys bonds as part of a strategy to control interest rates and stabilize the economy. That's its mandate. Pouring money to the stock market in order to manipulate it doesn't accomplish any of that. In the end, we have specific rules against market manipulation in this country because the manipulation creates a false impression of economic strength. It lulls you into thinking that we're going to make money if we just buy stocks because the government will be in there propping them up in the end. In truth, no one, no government is bigger than the stock market. And if the Chinese government decides it no longer wants to support stocks, who knows how much money you'll end up losing if you buy them? Much better to buy stocks of companies that are actually doing better, because that money will keep coming in by the companies, not the government. What's the point in establishing a false sense of security about potentially worthless companies? Who knows? Maybe China should just go. Maybe they should just. Why do they outlaw selling? And maybe they restrict how much you can dump into the government's bid. Hey, I got it. Why don't you jail short sellers, guys? The Chinese government never ceases to astound me when it comes to the precision with which they rebut presumptions. We've gotten used to the idea that President Xi was returning to his communist roots and cracking down on the billionaire class. But today we find out that Jack Ma is out there buying Alibaba stock along with Joe Tsai. I thought Ma had all but disappeared, but now they tried him out in a cynical bid to lure in more hapless foreign investors. He's become part of the propaganda machine now? Never forget, Chinese companies have these attractive spurts that lure in the unsuspecting, and then when the true fundamentals emerge, they crush you. Believe me when I say this time will be no different. It's just not worth the risk, even as our own cynical brokers, desperate for Chinese IPOs to make their quarter, will swear up and down that this time China's the real deal and you must buy it. You know who they are? They are what I call useful idiots, ripe for President Xi's picking. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.